Good afternoon, everybody. Camille Macri's here. This is Food, Love, and Transformation. I am joined by a new friend today. Her name is Yvette Bolin, and she is also a fellow podcaster. She has this really fun new podcast on iTunes called I Heart Life. It's super cute, or at least the cover image is. That's how I found her, from a really cute image. Yvette is a published author and spiritual living coach, the founder of I Heart Life, Inc., which is dedicated to helping people love life again. Her blog is called Life in Quotes, and I just told you about her podcast on iTunes. She also has a telecourse coming up that she's going to tell you more about, on clearing mental and spatial clutter. Don't we all need help with that? Pulling from 12 years of study, seminars, interviews, and real-world practice, she reveals how to apply spiritual principles and the laws of the universe to achieving inner peace. That is God's work that you are doing, my friend.
I'd like to think so.
It is. Thank you so much for coming on today. It is lovely to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. So what I always like to do just to start out my shows is I love hearing how people got onto their life path. I think that it's the most wonderful thing when people are actively just doing the things that light them up and bring them joy and are making that contribution that only they can make to the planet. So tell my listeners a little bit about your story and how you became this amazing person.
Aw, thank you. since as far as I can remember back elementary school, I've always been a very contemplative person. Maybe some would call me very quiet. Mm-hmm. But it's just because I like to observe life, kind of how it's unfolding and take into assessment how I might be impacting it, what other people might be doing to impact, how people are relating to one another, what's making, you know, this person coil back, you know, instead of being this live, vibrant person, and kind of all that from way back, as far as I can remember, maybe when I could, you know, think.
You were just always very sensitive to your environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And to people and understanding kind of the way people relate, I would say is a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. But as I just went on, I read books. I was born and raised Catholic. And then I did all the way up to confirmation. So if you're Catholic, you know, that's kind of the last phase before the last sacrament before marriage, for instance. And then I went to college and then I just got baptized Christian because I thought, well, I don't really connect with Catholicism for various reasons, went into Christianity and kind of just was on this search, but all the while still having this rooted, reverence about me, you know, with God and divinity. Mm-hmm. And then finally I found my way into just this spiritual realm, to understanding, you know, that we're first non-physical before we're physical. Everything emerges from a spiritual place. And then since then, I've just dedicated myself to, well, how can I apply this in my friendships? You know, when people ask me advice, it's not from a normal, like, girl chat conversation. It's very, I would say, centered. So I might not give always the best advice, but it's advice they need to hear.
Well, it is the best advice. It's just not the advice they want to hear.
Time, they might not think so, but days later they'll say, "Man, yeah, and I did what you said, and it did change things for me." So, tough love. Confirmation just along the way that I'm doing kind of this spiritual work. Mm-hmm. And so now I would just say that I'm actually doing it as a profession instead of just kind of. Just what interests me on the side.
Yeah. So tell me, what are some of the other things that you've done that helped to gel you? What Have you done other spiritual type practices? Like, what other kinds of things have you gotten your hands in?
I would say that a big turning point was yoga.
Okay.
So, you know, my first class in yoga, I just went to stretch. I wanted to make sure that I was an old lady that could move and not be, you know, decrepit and twisting away. I wanted to make sure that I was a flexible elderly woman, you know, future. So with that intention, I went into yoga. And after that, for the very first, 2006, the very first yoga class, I thought, I'm floating. This is
Wow. Real.
And I felt very aware and centered, very connected with me, very in my purpose and in my place.
After one time, huh?
One time.
That's
It's really cool. It's been calling me, because I had seen, you know, heard about yoga in college even, but never really done. If I was exposed to it, it was just very on a, you know, the company I was working for offered yoga classes, but it wasn't a spiritual retreat, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, oh, let's all get flexible and relieve some stress. But I actively went into it in 2006. And then from that class, I thought, well, there's something to this because I feel awfully different. And then from then on, just having that awareness about me, that centeredness to know that, oh, this is where I came from. And maybe it got bogged down by other things, other dogma and beliefs from other people.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I kind of shoved that away. This is where I am. This makes sense.
Yeah.
And I would say since then I've studied Buddhism, yoga from Hindu.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt everything.
Was your family cool with that?
See, they don't really understand that there's this spiritual foundation to yoga. I think they just see that I can, you know, do a handstand.
Okay. But so do they still think that you are actively good Catholic girl?
No, not at all. Okay. Still a good girl, but not Catholic. That was never really at all the impetus behind my being the way I am.
Okay.
And my mom would say that I'm a good girl. It was very deeper than that.
Yeah.
So she doesn't. I respect it. Obviously, I respect my family because my whole mom's side is Catholic, but she knows that I'm not. I think she expressed maybe some sadness. But that's, you know, like with any loss, we mourn the loss of things. And so I don't think she really understood why maybe she was sad.
Yeah. Would you still say that you're, I'm asking you all this from, because I'm relating this back to me. I was sort of the opposite where I grew up in a really new agey home. Where my mom was into astrology and shamanism and past lives and like the whole gamut of things. And she came from a Christian home and had her rebellion from that. And then I had my rebellion from my new age hippie mom was to go and become a Christian. So I was involved in it's not just a rebellion, but, but I was in a conservative church for several years and now am integrating. So now I'm like integrating all of it, the stuff from my childhood and the stuff from my years, you know, in the church and have come, we probably have come upon a sort of similar spiritual dogma. We did it at different things, a different way. But how actively, like, what would you say is what is like really, is there one foundation that's holding you more? Like, do you think of Jesus more? Do you think of the Buddha? Is it all like, how does it all sort of fit together for you?
I still very much look to Jesus because I think that there's, he's my hero,
mm-hmm.
you know, just his walk in life and mm-hmm. what he taught. So I will oftentimes reflect on stories from him and even in my teachings, we'll pull from Jesus. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we'll pull from Buddha, the man. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll pull from the Veda, you know, in the Hindu religion, I'll pull from that. So I think I am very much like a glutton for it all. And even on my podcast, or in my blog, I might write about something just to expose it to the world, but maybe I believe a fraction of it.
Right.
Meaning like a fraction of the truth, because even in our explaining something, ego comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So in our explanation, ego kind of forms itself like a malt ball. And the truth is that just the malt,
mm-hmm.
you know, but in an explanation, sometimes you have to kind of put the chocolate on.
Yeah.
And I don't mean by icy coating, just putting some meat, mm-hmm. Around the explanation. So yeah, I think I'm still kind of who I was way back when, but I am pulling from various things. And like you, and well, like your mom, I have studied astrology, have studied that whole thing too.
Mm-hmm.
Shamanism. So I've dabbled in it all, and I still probably take interest in it, but I don't necessarily attend.
Right.
Kind of the functions.
Right. Around,
like, for instance, shamanism or astrology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the thing that I really enjoy the most I'm finding is, I think for me, I come back to Jesus, and I think my mom really does too. But what's great and what I really love is in all of the things that I read, seeing that common thread that goes throughout and that, yeah,
absolutely.
like all of the universal truth. And it helps me to reconcile as opposed to just be confused by things that are seemingly contradictory. I don't see things as contradictions anymore. I see them as paradoxes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like how do you hold both things to be true? And in finding that balance, and how you're able to hold both things, you can really find like really supreme truth. Like I'm looking at right now, how do you be totally committed and also completely unattached? Like, so that, I don't know why, if that really even makes sense, but that's sort of how I take my spiritual walk now. Like taking these two things that could seemingly be opposing and seeing like, how do you find that truth that is throughout? And then even, yeah, just in my spirituality, like looking to see, it just makes things a lot richer and more interesting, and seeing like all of the threads of common truth between Buddhism and between Christianity. I mean, I don't actually think that they're contradictory. I think that ego certainly has come in terms of the ways that we verbalize them as humans, but I don't actually think that I think that everything all works pretty perfectly together.
Well, it does. And there is a oneness to it all. Mm-hmm. And even you and me, we're one, you know, on a spiritual level. And when I come into that oneness, that's where compassion emerges and love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you can have detached attachment and commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are kind of connecting and you see maybe how you might influence somebody or affect somebody on a very sensitive level.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will actually, that's funny. I will be doing a podcast on detached attachment you might like.
Yeah, I think I will. That's one of my spiritual disciplines right now is detached attachment.
Yeah.
So what are the things that, you know, this is a whole smorgasbord we're talking about at this moment. What, in the work that you do with your clients and in the work that you want to bring into the world, what is it that really lights your fire? Or like, where do you think that you're going to be able to make the biggest contribution?
Well, a long time ago, I was on Steve Pavlina's blog, and he has a post on there. Have you heard of him?
Yeah. Is he popular?
Yeah, thought leader on personal development.
Okay.
Yeah, very popular. Oh my gosh.
Okay.
But like 96 he started, which is why he's huge now.
Okay.
He knows online about the online world. So I was reading a blog post on how to find your purpose, and I did the technique that he suggested. Mm-hmm. Found my purpose was to inspire the people around me through the way that I live in beauty, peace, love, and abundance. Mm. So how those translate for me in things that I also have like a carnal passion for, like fashion and yoga and eating, you know, things like that. So I kind of merge the two. What I'm working on right now is how to live not minimally, but free from clutter. So I don't want to use the word minimally, even though it might result when you free yourself from clutter, it might result in living a very minimal life, mm-hmm. which is very freeing. And when you are clutter free mentally in mind and body and heart and home, you very much can have a peace, like just a serenity, enjoying the present moment. Everything is just good. And all you see is good, you know? And so that's what I want to inspire. And that's the work that I am doing right now. Eventually I can see that it'll move into how fashion can play a role in that. Mm-hmm. And some of the work that I do will involve like clearing a space, clearing a home of the clutter and maybe reorganizing it, interior design and things like that. So, which is also a passion of mine. So it'll all go hand in hand.
Cool. That's the best. I think that's the most exciting thing to me. I mean, I have a podcast called Food, Love, and Transformation. It's like I get to take all the things that I love and put them together into one thing. So I just...
Exactly.
I only ever now want to be surrounded by people who do those kinds of things. So it's like whose life work... That's so... I take it back. I don't only want to be with those people, but I get really inspired by people who have created careers around their passion and through their career being a manifestation of the things that make them most excited and that they're most interested in.
Yeah.
I love
that's
it.
That's how we should all operate, because it's from within. You'll notice that you can just burn the midnight oil doing it. Mm-hmm. You don't even see the clock tick by and the hours and just it's because you're on fire. This is like... You were made to do this.
Yeah. Oh, I spend a lot of time working, and sometimes it's a bit much, but it isn't. Most of it isn't work. I mean, there's the to-do of getting your bills paid, but I go to bed thinking about this stuff. I wake up thinking about it. I'm everywhere I am. I'm just thinking about this thing I want to bring into the world, and
yeah, how to bring it back and then channel it.
Yeah, and I get so sad for people who don't have that.
Well, I think everybody should
have that. That's why I always love on all of my shows to have people share their journeys. And because really the happiest people are the ones that are getting to do the things that they're passionate about. And I just want I want people to be happy and to be able to make their unique contribution to the world. So, yeah. So, okay. So there's a couple things that I know that my listeners would love to know about from you or to have your perspective. I certainly am really curious to know about this. So I want to break it down into three sort of sections. I want to talk about emotional eating and what really the root causes are of emotional eating. And then I want to go into the resistance. Like, you know, I can talk to people day and night about how to eat a healthy diet. These are the recipes. This is what you do. But, you know, if you have a whole bunch of undistinguished internal resistance to that, it's going to be really, really hard, you know, to actually, you know, be empowered around eating the way you know you should eat. And then going into, you know, just talking about mindful eating and mindfulness and bringing presence to your diet and leave the listeners empowered in and all of these just facets around that relationship with your food. So can we talk about that?
Yeah, love it. Let's go.
Okay, let's do it. So
like, what section is first?
Yeah, so let's first talk about, so why do people emotionally eat?
Well, it dates back to like when we were kids. So where there were tears, there was milk, right? So we were fed to stop crying, and it became kind of this comfort activity that we still use today, we still resort to today, eating. Mm-hmm. I think of emotional eating as eating for the ego. So it's eating for what the ego might need to feel better about. It's eating for ego's comfort. And I mean, comfort can come in the way of like stress relief. So I eat something that, you know, relieves my stress, or it's just an escape. So I think of food, eating food as like this escape away from stress. And oftentimes you'll zone out and you'll just eat the whole bag of chips and, you know, not even realize it. Mm-hmm. And as reward, right? So when we were kids, we were rewarded with ice cream cones when we were good or when we were sad. Mm. So it's a cultural phenomenon that food is this way because we've instilled it this way. So it's like this, we were inducted into eating this way, mm-hmm. and we know no other way. But the ego is very much at root because we have our triggers. So if I'm sad, if I'm angry, if I'm depressed, I'm stressed out, I'm tired, or I did something really great and I want to celebrate mm-hmm. my own way. Maybe some other people care or they don't. I want to celebrate. Then I can resort to eating. So that's what I think of as emotional eating. It's like a trigger response. It's habitual eating. Mm-hmm. So if I have something happen to me, my habit response is, well, I need to feel good fast. Where's my Snickers bar? Right. Where's my ice cream cone? Where's my bag of chips? Mm-hmm. And I even think that we can associate kind of our response, what we crave, with like what we're feeling. So
what do you mean by that?
So if I need to be soothed, let's say I'm sad, then I might want something sweet and creamy, right? So like milk, maybe something dairy based. Oh. If I'm bored, I might want something salt based, chips, crunch. It's fun. I can hear the crunch. Oh. I taste it. I do something. You know, if I want a reward, meat, so, you know, something hearty and salty and, you know, tasty.
But oftentimes want to reward myself with burgers. With bacon. With bacon on them.
I love burgers. Yeah, I'm definitely a meat lover. But yeah, exactly. And I mean, oftentimes, like, if you, and I don't know if you wanted to make this a different section, but I really feel like this is a good time to bring this up.
Just do it.
When we have a craving, it's either on our tongue or in our belly. So we can kind of associate that. Well, sometimes our bodies are in need of the iron that comes from meat, or in need, we crave sugar because we need protein, but we crave sugar because that's what it's gotten before. Instead of getting the protein that it needs, we've always resorted to the quick grab, mm-hmm. the quick energy.
Right.
You know, and then who cares about the crash that I'm going to have in 20 minutes?
Right. I need the quick. Give this to me right now. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you can detect where the craving is exactly, because a tongue craving will come up instantaneously, mm-hmm. suddenly, all out of nowhere. And that's ego because it smelled something and wanted it. It saw somebody else eating it and wanted it. It had a memory about when I was in Rome and I had spaghetti and now I want spaghetti. and then you have a taste for it. But if it's in the belly, that's immediately satiated. If I was to eat something, I can immediately satiate my belly hunger, my real hunger, my physical body needs fuel hunger. That's gradual. So you can kind of fill yourself. You can even ward off physical hunger by eating maybe every 2 hours. Or, if I know it's lunchtime and I get a break, then my body will, I'll be hungry because it knows this is the time that I've scheduled myself to eat. So my body's going to go in and, okay, we're ready for food. We're ready to work, mm-hmm. you know, because this is when my boss lets me go. I've created myself. Same with working out. I always do the treadmill well, then my body's going to only burn off the same 300 calories. And until you break your cycle of what you do to work out, it's going to only be that threshold of 300 calories.
Interesting.
So same thing. I mean, the body comes in to work, you know, when there's physical hunger involved.
That's really interesting. Huh. I'd never heard some of that like that before. So to go, I want to touch just a little bit deeper in this emotional eating. So I know for me, and maybe, so do you know, actually, I would say women, I was actually just in a course called Understanding Women this weekend, where I was learned/reminded that women are entirely emotional beings, that we just are. Men are logical beings for the most part, and women, I mean, the core of us, I mean, it's our heart, it's our emotions. And so it makes so much sense that women eat emotionally much more than men. You would say that that's probably true, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, way more, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever used to watch Friends?
Yeah.
Did you remember that episode where Ross said to Monica, "Food is not love, Monica"? Do you remember that one? Oh my God. I think about that, and in Ross's voice, if I'm having, so I don't have as many binges as I used to have, and I'm able to stop myself. I mean, I have a lot more awareness and presence around it, but you know, there are times where it's like, I know that I'm emotional eating. I don't even care that I'm emotional eating. And I'm just like shoveling in my coconut ice cream and hearing Ross's voice in my head. Food is not love, Camille. But in that moment, it is. It so is. It's like, it's filling the emptiness. It's filling the void of, you know, whatever it is that I don't really want to deal with. Do you have anything more to say about that?
Well, you hit like a nail on the head by saying a void. So it's something that's very deep. We don't have, I mean, because you're not going to satisfy this void by eating.
Right.
While the experience is very engaging and enriching and, you know, to taste the flavors on the tongue it's a sensory experience. It's a sensual experience, and it's what makes life so great. I love traveling because I get to try new foods and the mm-hmm. flavor profile of China versus a Brazil versus an Argentina. Like it's astounding and it's lovely and it's beautiful. And like the craft, I love it. Mm-hmm. I love to eat. So that in itself, so even the coconut ice cream, that's an experience to, and at least you were mindful of your eating. You knew, you heard Ross, you knew what you were doing. Maybe you ate less than you would have.
I'm sure. Oh, for sure.
If you weren't so mindful.
Well, I don't have much of a tolerance for sugar anymore, just because I'm just so much cleaner and I eat almost no sugar now, that even last night I was at the supermarket and I got this kettle corn, and normally when I could have plowed away like a whole container of it, I ate like 10 pieces and it was like, okay, that's enough.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Well, and it is good. And I think mindful eating is when you can just have a taste, mm-hmm. when you can just have a taste of something and you can appreciate that taste. Mm-hmm. If you start to go into, will it, you know, you ask yourself, will this taste be enough? And you know it won't, then you know you're emotionally eating.
Yeah.
So but sometimes the taste is good.
I'm totally noticing the difference for me. So much of the time, it is just enough for me, because I'm also obviously a food lover, where I just want to experience the flavor. I want to then sort of, because I'm a chef, I want to pull apart how it was made and, you know, all of that. And just a taste is enough. Versus the times where you're just like devouring this thing, hoping that it's going to fill something up in you.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
It's such a different sensation.
It is. I mean, because eating to fill a void, one, there's no satiation there.
Right.
And then it requires deeper work.
Yeah. So what is there something that, what can a person do in that moment where they have that, where they know, oh, this is my pattern. It's 7 o'clock and I'm sitting on the couch and I know, and I just pulled out this blah-de-dee-blah And if I start eating this ice cream, I'm not going to stop. And then I'm going to be really upset. You know what? I just people aren't probably usually being that conscious about it, but what's something that a person can do to cut that pattern off in its tracks?
It's so easy. It's ridiculous.
Okay,
it's,
tell us.
It's turning off the TV. It's turning off conversation. I realize I want to eat this ice cream, but I don't want to eat the whole thing. It's just taking a second. It's taking 5 minutes even before you have that ice cream, before you eat it, sit down and eat it, that you think about, okay, I'm going to have ice cream in 5 minutes. Do I want it? Maybe explore, you know, why am I eating it? Oh, I want the taste. Okay, we'll scoop out maybe 2 spoonfuls into a bowl. Don't eat from the carton. The carton away. You know, have your bowl. And actually pull out a chair and sit at the dining table.
Yeah.
Don't sit in front of the TV and watch and mindlessly just watch. Because you're going to associate whatever emotions you're getting from the television show with eating. And they go hand in hand. And then before you know it, you're feeding this habit. And we go back to habit. With every time I watch Friends, I want ice cream. Same with the cigarette smoker. Every time there's a break at work, I want a cigarette. Every time I see my friends and they're smoking, I want a cigarette. Every time I smell it, I want a cigarette. You have to disassociate yourself with those triggers. So if Friends, I eat ice cream, if that's kind of what you see is happening, then maybe you don't watch Friends for a week. Or maybe on your lap while you're watching Friends is, well, first off, it should be nothing. But right. Maybe it's kale chips.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. But don't, try not to, if only break that habit, break that link between ice cream and Friends, for instance.
Right.
But yeah, just pulling out a chair at the dining table and eating your ice cream. Or maybe just taking a spoonful, putting the ice cream away, and just having that spoonful is going to be enough. Because when you, and then having that distance of 5 minutes, when you kind of separate yourself from the action and you take a step back, then you realize, well, why am I eating this? Is it a tongue craving? Is it a belly craving? Can I get by with just one spoonful? And take in that spoonful.
Right.
If you can just do the spoonful, take in the spoonful.
Right, and
you
really know you want more. Enjoy it.
Yeah, just get it. Why do you like ice cream? Well, sit down and like take all the 20 minutes it takes to eat that 2-scoop bowlful and enjoy it. Enjoy the reason why you want it in the first place, right? A tongue craving. Don't mindlessly eat it, because then why'd you want it? I could eat anything if I'm mindlessly eating. But no, I have habits. I have triggers. I have friends that I'm watching. And I want ice cream.
It's so interesting. Even like everything you're saying makes perfect sense. And what I'm still left with is, and this is embarrassing sort of to admit, but actually one of my only, I don't have a lot of vices. I really don't. I would say one of my last remaining vices is, and I maybe do this now once a week, is watching, not Friends anymore, but watching, I watch almost no TV, but watching like an hour of funny television and eating something salty and crunchy, either eating chips or eating ice cream or something that's like that, that is like, and actually sitting and eating it. And even as I'm doing it and I know, oh, this probably isn't the healthiest thing, it's, there is this satisfaction that comes from just turning off my life and laughing at this show and eating this food that I really don't eat most of the week, and it makes me feel so good. Is there a place for that, to just do that?
I do. I think it's like date night with yourself, right? What do we do on date night? We go to the movies and we have a bowl of popcorn. I'm right there with you, Camille. I love having my popcorn and watching, you know, whatever hour-long show that I recorded.
Right.
Because, you know, we have DVR now, so we can fast forward through the commercials, and it's just, it's perfect. Yeah, it's like my little movie night, and then I'll turn it off after an hour and then go
do your thing.
Continue what I was doing.
Yeah, because I think
there's a place for that.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking that, you know, if you don't let yourself do any of that stuff at all, I mean, and it's different. That's like actually a very different experience for me than, let's say, I'm having a really hard day and I'm not dealing with something and I'm just frustrated and I just angrily just go to the kitchen to just try to just get rid of it, whatever that feeling is. It actually, I do enjoy it. And I think what I've learned is that I used to make myself feel so guilty and bad and wrong for doing that thing. Oh my gosh, I'm eating this thing I shouldn't eat in front of the show that I shouldn't be watching. I should know better. I should not be watching TV. It doesn't do anything good for my brain. But it's like I'm still doing it and I'm enjoying it sort of, but then making myself feel so guilty and bad for doing it. And so when I came to the point of, okay, I'm just going to do it and enjoy it, sort of like what you're saying about enjoying the bite. And there's nothing wrong with it and just like giving myself a break. You know, it's not watching television for 5 hours a night, every single night, but watching a couple hours of TV a week with a little bit of semi-junk food, it's not really so bad.
No, we all need our vices. It's not the act. Nothing's bad unless you label it bad.
Right.
So you've done the work on your guilt, not even on eating in front of the TV, mm-hmm. not even, and that's why I say it's deeper. The guilt is what triggers all these. Well, I can't even enjoy, you know, my popcorn in this show because I have so much guilt. Well, work on the guilt. Why do you have guilt? Who told you it was bad? Why do you believe you shouldn't do this?
Right.
And that's the deeper work that you did, mm-hmm. which allows you to still enjoy your ice cream or your popcorn or your chips in front of the one show you watch a week.
It almost seems like I do it now that I've given myself the permission to do it. I have the desire to do it a lot less.
Yeah.
I used to be in a cycle of feeling guilty about it all the time and doing it all the time.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
No, it's because you worked on like this internal, you had this internal, I don't know, I want to say, you worked internally on the root issue. So whatever you did, and then all else kind of followed. It follows suit.
Right.
If you realize that you are friends with somebody that, you know, maybe is unhealthy for you, she brings out the worst in you, whatever. And you start to, well, I'm going to not focus on what's wrong with this relationship, but instead, what is causing me, why is she a trigger for me? Why do we not get along? What is it about me that I'm doing maybe that's contributing to why I am so unhappy, you know, taking the responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So same thing and you'll notice when you start to kind of reach for more healthy relationships or reach for more healthy foods, then everything else kind of falls away. The baggage falls away. When you start seeing only, this is the life I want for myself, this is the healthy route, in all aspects of life,
mm-hmm.
everything just falls away. What shouldn't be there falls away.
I love
and start to attract more.
Yeah. I love that you said that because I wrote an article that, that really speaks to that is why will you maintain your healthy diet? You know, what is it? Create for yourself a reason. You know, the reason can't just be, I mean, maybe for some people it could, but you know, everyone wants to like have a great body for a bikini body for summer. I mean, we live in Southern California, but I don't know about you, but for me, having a bikini body is not an empowering enough reason to have me stay the course. It just isn't. It's like, whatever, I'll just not go to the beach and I'll eat potato chips all night. They're so delicious. Like, and so it wasn't until I really did begin to do the work for myself of, what is my life really about? What is the contribution I really want to make to the planet? Getting that I really have one, that, you know, that my life, not just my life, but every human life is so valuable that God has given us these lives on purpose. And as you find that purpose, you know, your reason for, you know, your reason for living, then it's, okay, so I want to live a long time. I know how valuable my life is. I want to make a huge difference. So now how do I empower that? Okay, well, I probably should be feeding this human vessel here, this thing that's going to help me make that contribution. I should probably try to figure out how to feed it the things that are going to, like, really have...
Keep it around.
Keep it around, exactly. And that was when it was doing that work that had the spending one night a week watching TV, eating junk food, as opposed to five nights a week, a lot easier. You know, eating one bite of ice cream versus one half gallon of ice cream, a lot easier. Just, and I think it really is pointing to what you're saying is, you know, you get focused on that contribution. You know, you didn't say contribution, but you just get focused on what it is you're here for, and the other, all of those other habits that aren't, that don't match up to that fall off a lot more easily. You don't have to fight with yourself so much.
No, not at all. And you're probably busy most nights, whereas before you would fill your nights with popcorn and a show.
Yeah.
You're busy and you're gladly working because you found mm-hmm. this life's work that pleases you and makes you happy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely it. I was always doing the work, but before it was like I was exhausted, and then it was like all I could do was lay on the couch and eat something. But now it's like I'm enlivened by my work, and then it's like all this vicious cycle. See, or not a vicious, it is a cycle. But you know, you eat healthier, and then you have more energy, so you have better moods, and then you want to do more, and you don't want to be sitting in front of the television, and so it all plays in. So. Okay. So
I have to say something, yeah. Camille, because you did mention like with the bikini, not wanting to wear the bikini, mm-hmm. because that is a media fed ideal that you weren't given, that you were given, that you didn't give yourself. So that was something that somebody fed into you. This is the belief you should have. You should want to wear a bikini at summer, you know. And so it never resonated with you. It was given to you. You refused it subconsciously, mm-hmm. consciously refused it. And you weren't convinced. So it was until you found something that was convincing, life's purpose, whatever, right. that you actually saw that, man, this is effortless.
Right. And now that I have that, it's so interesting. Now, like, as soon as we get off, I'm going to go exercise. And I'm actually... going to gladly go exercise, and I am quite happy to see myself in a bikini now. But that wasn't the reason. It's like a nice added little bonus to, hey, I actually found the contribution I want to make for the rest of my life, like why I was put here on this earth. Like, that is inspiring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So what are some practices for, I know you love everything around mindfulness and around bringing more presence into your life. I'd love to know how you do that, not just around eating, but just what are some of the practices that my listeners can take away for just living more peacefully and mindfully and in just in a state of love?
Well, definitely. I would say first off, meditation is good. And why I call it meditation, it's time with yourself, connecting with yourself, hearing yourself, and disconnecting with what you hear. So when you pay attention to what's being said in your mind, the thoughts, you actually see kind of how crazy it is, mm-hmm. and how, wow, oh my gosh, I've been living under this all my life. No wonder I'm a spaz. No wonder I'm depressed. No wonder
you're identified with it as you.
Exactly. So disidentifying with the thoughts that you hear, knowing that they're not you, really happens in meditation. For me, it kind of happened. I approached meditation through yoga. Mm-hmm. So I realized that, I mean, and it is yoga. Meditation, it's like an act of meditation, yoga. Mm-hmm. So it's Tai Chi. I mean, tons of martial arts come through that. This silencing and this observing. So to silence the thoughts is really kind of what you would like to achieve, but it's not the goal. It's not necessarily what is required in meditation. It's just
So do you come, do people who are very advanced in meditation, do they come to a place where their thoughts actually are silenced?
I don't believe that that's possible.
I don't think
a Buddhist monk has conquered that. No. I think angels are the only ones that have no thought.
Because that's what our human machine does. It's like our brain has thoughts.
It's how we operate on this world. It's what we've been equipped with because it serves its purpose. And I do. I go into that even in what I teach and what I do. I go into our outer and inner purpose. So I'm just going to take this off. my earring keeps falling off. I go into like an inner and outer purpose because that's what you want to connect with. So I think living more mindfully, living with more peace, more joy is connecting with our inner purpose. Realizing that it's not what we're doing with this body. It's not what we do with our senses. It's not even the jobs that we do, but there's something deeper inside. And meditation kind of acquaints you with that type of thing. When you're more advanced in meditation, and I hate to use the word advanced, when you've been doing it long enough to where you've convinced yourself of its worth and its value, your thoughts are fewer and farther between. And I think my hair's pulling my earrings out. So they're fewer and farther between. Mm-hmm. So you can have a meditation session where maybe a thought or two kind of come up, but you're probably still going to need the distraction of maybe it's Om or it's, there is a podcast on mine just for the sake of brevity on this topic about meditation.
Cool.
So I don't have to go into too much here with you, but
it is
about, because the goal isn't silencing your thoughts. It's more observing your thoughts. Seeing that it's strengthening the brain to observe the thought and then go back to the silent place. Mm. Every time a thought comes up, we go back to the silent place. And pretty soon that muscle, just like tying our shoes, just like reaching for a glass of water, is so instinctual.
Right.
I don't even think about it.
Right.
Sneezing, I don't think about it. Breathing, I don't think about it. It's a function that I don't think it's effortless.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen in meditation. It's going to be effortless to just pull the thoughts away and actually thoughts that do come will be so inspired that they might even, you know, start your next business.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. I get I wouldn't consider myself to be an expert. Well, actually, so what I do is, do you know about speaking in tongues?
Yeah.
So I speak in tongues. And
me too.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. So
I came from that apostolic.
Yeah. And it was interesting how when I was in church, it's weird to be, I'm not able to do it if there's anybody around. It's a very private thing for me. I guess I don't mind sharing that I do it, but I don't really understand it. I remember reading about it in the Bible and then I wanted to start speaking in tongues when I was in this church and other people were doing it and it seemed like a cool thing. And then one day I had been asking for it and then literally one day I just started doing it. It was just the middle of the day. I was washing laundry. I can remember the moment. And since then, I haven't done it regularly, but I came back to doing it more recently where that is my most, what I consider to be effective meditation happens when I'm speaking in tongues. Does that count? I don't even really understand what's happening.
I think it does.
I don't even know what it is.
However you approach, because speaking in tongues is intercession. So it's intercessing for the angels is what that camp would call it. And it's very spiritual in nature. I mean, because if you think about it, it's a language, it's harmless. It's a language. It's coming out. It wants to be heard. It wants to be spoken aloud. And it's very much like, if you notice, you're not thinking about anything while you're doing it.
Right.
It's very much
that's
like,
the thing is my mind. Yeah, my mind is able to, it gives my mind a place to just focus. Like it focuses on the sounds coming out of my mouth and then just the way that it feels on my tongue. And not completely. I mean, there still are some thoughts back there, but it feels so cathartic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's a faith that comes that whatever I'm speaking knows the prayers to pray that my mind couldn't even come up with. It's just a faith that whatever my spirit needs to speak to God or the angels or whatever is coming through for me on my behalf.
Is
that okay?
And that's exactly what I understand it to be as well. And it's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Does it take the place of, I'm so always wanting to figure things out in my head. I'm crazy. I guess it's just, I'm frustrated about meditation. I think what it really comes down to, I feel like okay. I can speak in tongues and feel successful in it and feel good and feel like I'm really getting somewhere. Whereas with meditation was straight, just like sitting and just being in the silence. I just am always frustrated. I can't because I get so attached to the thoughts.
And that it'll be that way. The frustration will be probably the first several sessions that you set down for yourself. Yeah. I advise just starting out with 5 minutes a day because it's for you. Right now you don't believe it's for you. It's for you if you believe it's for you.
Mm-hmm.
So until you've made that switch, you won't think otherwise. And you'll be resistant, like I am to math,
mm-hmm.
because I don't think I can get it.
Right.
I don't think I'll understand addition, subtraction, so I don't even go there.
Yeah.
I don't think I can silence my thoughts because you think that that's the goal, so I don't even want to meditate. I don't want to go there. But that's not the goal. The goal is to build a muscle. Build a muscle of separate just the distinction between me and these thoughts. So that way in my everyday walking life, I'm actually recognizing, oh, I'm telling myself that I'll never look good in a bikini, but that's not true.
That's just one of those thoughts that I'm able to
fleeting
see. Yeah.
Yeah. But it, yeah. But to answer your question, will that take its place? I don't even begin to
pretend to know,
pretend to have any type of, you know, badge or I think whatever serves you, if that serves you and it achieves the same results, you said you still think some thoughts. I wonder if those thoughts that you, if you can look at those thoughts while you intercess,
mm-hmm.
if you can say, well, are they self-conscious thoughts? Can I not speak in tongues in front of people because I'm self-conscious about it? Have I not convinced myself that it's okay to speak in tongues? Are there still some stigmas? Maybe my mom, maybe the church, maybe,
right.
You know, my school
that's
told
weird.
Me it's not okay.
Right.
And if it is, then.
Well, I must not think it's that weird because I am telling everybody about this on the podcast.
Which is freeing, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It was just interesting to have this conversation with you because I have thought to myself before in the moments in the morning, you know, I have, you know, the way that I start my day and I have it down as the list is meditate. And then I start to try to meditate and I can't. And so then I speak in tongues instead. And then I wonder, is this the same? Is this as good? And these are just thoughts that I've had to myself. I'm like, oh, Yvette has the answer.
Well, maybe kind of do like this, this volleyball approach to it. So maybe you can intercess for some of the time if you set aside 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe you can let your tongue relax and there's nothing coming out and sit in that silence.
In that silence, yeah.
And then let kind of your body move into the tongues. If, you know, just kind of be led.
Mm-hmm.
Very, like consciously. And I say consciously, not unconsciously. So very aware.
Mm-hmm.
Let whatever your spirit wants to do, let it move you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, I've come... I used to, I'm so, it's so funny, the ego, but I have like the right way of starting, because I know that the way I start my day is so important. You know, if I get up in the morning and just try to go straight to work on the computer, I'm done. It's like, I'm going to be unhappy for the whole day and I'm not going to be productive and I'm just not going to be connected to my purpose and why I'm here versus, you know, how to do it. But then I was getting all hung up because I listened to all these different people say, do this, do that, do this, do that. And so I was like, oh my God, what should I be doing? What's the way that I should be starting my day that's the most effective? So just this week, I wrote down all of the things that I've done in the mornings to start my day, you know, from gratitude to journaling to speaking in tongues. Like, I wrote everything down to looking at my vision board. And at first I was thinking, okay, I have to do it this way or trying to craft. And I was like, oh, and I created it like a specials board. I have a dry erase board in my room now where I'm just choosing the things I want to do. And I do different things each day based upon how my spirit is led. And it's been really cool. I've been doing like lots of different things and yeah.
And setting aside a certain time, like an hour.
Yeah. It ends up being, I probably should set a little less time, but I've been spending usually 2 hours because because I enjoy it so much. I just get into the, yeah, maybe 2 hours might be a little bit too extravagant, but.
I don't think so. My morning ritual is 3 hours.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Well, probably actually when it comes down, because I juice every morning and then, you know, with making, you know, so like making juice and cleaning up and...
Including breakfast, exactly.
Yeah, I guess it probably is almost 3 hours. And that doesn't include, since I usually end up doing my day like this, that's actually not including getting dressed. okay, that's awesome. Oh, I love this conversation. Is there anything else that you want to say around the how-to of mindful eating?
Well, some steps, if you will.
Yes.
So, you know, when approaching, so a different way to approach eating. I like to say a little prayer of gratitude right before I eat. So, it could just be, you know, silencing, here's the food in front of me, and I just close my eyes. And I really want to just say thanks to the hands that prepared it and the food, the animals that maybe gave their life for it, or because it's the food chain, no judgment around what I say or, you know, but just gratitude, everything that's involved in making this plate. And then eating. So taking that time to stop. Don't just eat, but stop. Realize, okay, you know, what do I have before me? I'm going to eat for nutrition, for instance. I'm going to eat because my body needs this right now. And I also like to drink water 30 minutes before. I don't like to drink liquids during the food.
Oh, yeah. That is not good.
Okay. Good.
Well, it dilutes your stomach acids and...
Yeah. Yeah, the enzymes that should be like doing work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. So drink 30 minutes before. Sometimes that curbs like this ravenous thing that we do sometimes when we eat mindlessly. So kind of filling, or maybe having soup before so that you can slow down. Mm-hmm. And really slowing down when you eat. I think that's a big thing.
Not sitting in front of a television eating.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, if you can... I know some people who, you know, they'll be in social settings, will be at dinner, maybe it's a date or it's a group, you know, meal. It might come off odd or weird that you say, you know, I'm just going to eat for a second. Or maybe you just shut off from the conversation or you kind of just go to eat while everyone else stays talking.
Mm-hmm.
In group settings, it's easier to kind of just kind of retreat and eat.
Mm-hmm.
Because in silence... there's observing what I'm doing. There's observing the fork going in my mouth. There's the tasting of the flavors. I like to put it up to my nose and smell it.
Mm-hmm.
I like to get all my senses involved because
that also stimulates your digestion.
Oh, to
did
smell
you know
it?
That?
Yeah, no, I didn't know.
Yeah, so that you actually, you eat first. You've probably heard you eat first with your eyes. But so I'm almost positive that this is scientific, that I'm not making it up, but that you begin to release the chemicals, when you're looking at your food and when you're smelling the food, then you're already beginning to release chemicals in your mind that's going to prepare your body for the digestion process. And
salivate.
Exactly. Yeah. You salivate over something perfect. And so then as you're eating your food and, you know, you chew it slowly, the digestion is happening then first as you're chewing and chewing slowly and all of that. So that's sort of the scientific behind what the spiritual side you're saying.
Nice. Mm-hmm. And see, you notice how we were talking about oneness before, how when you are in truth, it all
fits together.
I didn't need to know the science to know that this was right for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, exactly.
Very science.
Absolutely. That's what I love. How yeah, it all comes together.
Yeah. So yeah, smelling it before really taste. This is, I'm eating this and it's good and I'm grateful and I'm excited to eat. Eating's fun. And knowing, you know, maybe even dissecting on your tongue or in your nose, what's involved in it, what flavors are in it. But in that silence while you're eating, you can do that.
Yeah.
You know, you're not talking and, you know, because a lot of us are driven to socially eat and then we're mindlessly eating because we need something to do with our hands. Mm-hmm. We need something to do with our mouth if we're not talking.
Yeah.
You know, it's a nervous tick and it's eating for the ego.
Yeah.
It's eating to comfort that ego's nerves.
Yeah. Very, very good. I love this conversation. So tell us, you told us a little bit about you. Tell us what you have going on. We talked a little bit about it at the beginning, but I know you have a cool new product that you're working on. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So one of the things in my life's purpose is to really bring about more inner peace because we're in this chaotic world and our minds are just filled with thoughts. We were talking earlier and it's clutter. I mean, it's these thoughts that make our day go down if we're not conscious about it. You know, it could just really rile feathers or whatever. We can come from a negative place when speaking to somebody else because we're so cluttered here. We've not given ourselves that second to, you know, breathe it all out. I want to help people declutter their minds, their bodies, their hearts, their homes. So in that, I've created a course. So we're going to have a teleseminar start later this month of May. And I'll offer it periodically, but this is the inaugural series of it. So it'll be a 5-week course. And you can go to, I'll give you the link so you can put it on your site. But it's lifefreeandclear.com.
Nice.
You want to go there and, yeah, so it'll be some information on that. There's also a quiz on that site. So if you're curious about, you know, how far from peace am I? I mean, can I gauge how cluttered I am up there?
Yeah, oh, cool.
Quiz that can help you there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of where my focus is, inner peace.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I will post all of that below. I definitely am going to go listen to your meditation podcast. She has some great podcasts, you guys. I said at the beginning, but the way that we connected was I was looking for what was cool and new on iTunes, and this was a podcast that really stuck out to me as being the kind of person who would really be a contribution to you guys. And I'm so glad that I reached out to you.
Me too.
And I didn't even know you lived in San Diego. Now we get to be friends.
Neighbors.
Woohoo. I'm so excited. Okay. So signing out. Thank you everybody for tuning in today. I hope that you got a lot out of this and that's it. We love you.
Thanks.
Bye.